Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Want to pay for your neighbor's mortgage that has an extra bathroom and can't pay their bills? Raise their hand.
How about we all...
President Obama, are you listening?
How about we all stop paying our mortgage? It's a moral hazard.
This is like mob rule here. I'm getting scared.
Cuba used to have mansions and a relatively decent economy. They moved from the individual to the collective. Now they're driving 54 Chevys. Maybe the last great car to come out of Detroit.
I used to buy everything for him. Everything. I mean, he was filet mignon, lobster tails,
he ate well.
Chocolate. He could have been more my son than if I gave birth to him.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love again. Had no love and say you know when. You know I love you. Yes, I do. And I'm saving all my love in jail for you.
This song goes out to all the liberal women of Connecticut. Now, the only question that occurs to me is when the libs of Connecticut will approve interspecies marriage. In the vanguard with gay marriage, it's only a matter of time until Connecticut moves forward on the progressive scale and permits the relationships that are hidden between the sheets to come out into the daylight. The fact of the matter is hiding these man-animal relationships in Connecticut may have actually caused this tragic incident. If only this poor woman could have taken the monkey for her groom in a church in Connecticut, perhaps this incident would not have occurred. Well, the rest you can fill in for yourself. The world's crazy. It's getting crazier by the second. Welcome to the Savage Nation. We have a charlatan for president who's faking it and making it up as he goes along. We have an absolute dimwit running the Treasury Department who still doesn't know how to run the Treasury. I don't think the man can balance a checkbook. We have an obvious crypto-racist running the Justice Department who's obsessed with race when we were told all of this would be behind us. The weird jungle love and the chimp tragedy is a heck of a story. It's great. It's great to be alive in interesting times. Welcome to the Savage Nation. If you would like to call the Savage Nation on these or any other topics, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Bill Ayers to defend Ward Churchill on eve of Colorado professor's trial. Whoops. Whoops. That's right. Bill Ayers, the overt Marxist, radical, bomber, friend of Obama, will visit the University of Colorado next month to speak in support of Ward Churchill, just day before the fired professor's lawsuit, if you remember that story. The Czech president, the president of Czechoslovakia, a fine man with a real PhD, is comparing the new European Union to the Soviet Union. Read the story. Read the story. Netanyahu endorsed as Israel PM. Well, we wish him luck. The fact of the matter is he's been a PM before and he did nothing. We learned today also that, actually we learned minutes ago that the UN made a little mistake. It was whoops. We learned that actually Iran does have enough uranium to make one bomb. They were wrong. I mean, look, what, it's only the UN. You know, look, what's one bomb between friends? And what's the UN? You know, they made a mistake. They're only human. They tried their best. And whoops, they made a mistake. And that fraudulent, sanctimonious phony, Bill Moyers, did you hear about him? Oh, yeah, read the article on michaelsavage.com. Bill Moyers, the most sanctimonious prude in the history of television, Mr. Liberal, is described in new records released from the FBI as seeking information on whether individuals were homosexuals for his boss, LBJ. That's right. Mr. Sanctimonious Fraud, you baggy-eyed Bolshevik, you. Pox upon your house, Moyers. You put me down, did you? You'll be on the dustbin of history long before I will, Moyers. What else do I want to talk about here? Whatever. Phone number 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You want to talk about the monkey lady. You want to talk about the CNBC reality show. You want to talk about Obama's shoot straight. Could you imagine the new attorney general calling America racial cowards? Could you imagine Hillary Clinton around the world reaching out to Muslims? Can you imagine the tax cheat Timothy Geithner, who can't come up with a plan to help the economy? Is this the kind of change you voted for? So we've got a revolt in the stock market against Obama's gang. We got the Obama gang that can't shoot straight. We got the monkey lady continued. And now she's a movie star. Only in America. Only in America could someone involved in such a tragedy suddenly turn into a movie star. This woman is made for one television show in particular. This show is made for the crazy woman who has been running something on a missing girl for 3 months straight now with crazy eye. The woman who runs that show, Nancy Graceless, I'm telling you, well, let's let it go with that. You know what I think of her. Then there's another show at the Rotting Jungle Fruit, the women, the screeching horrendous women with Walters. Barbara Walters, I don't know, if I were in charge, if I had any power and there was a tribunal and people had to come before me and they get punished according to what they did to this society, Barbara Walters would come before me and I'd say, let me hear what you do for the last 50 years. This is what you did for a living. Okay, here's your punishment. You have to stand outside the Lincoln Tunnel from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. in fishnet stockings for the rest of your life. She won't have any takers, but she'd have to stand there to realize how far she's fallen. That's what I think of her. Now, why are you afraid to talk about race when the racist in the Justice Department is not afraid to call you a coward? Didn't you think that Obama would put all of this behind him? I didn't. Not for 1 second did I think so. No. I knew this was coming. They want to stir up racial hatred in the country. And you know what? I'm not afraid to talk about race. Let's talk about it. Let's see. We have a black president. At least that's what he says he is, even though he's 50% white. We'll go along with the program. He's black. Now, I said to you, he's 50% black and 50% white. So I said to you, how can you call him the first black president? He's what he is. I don't care about his race, but they made it an issue. So you liberals are so crazy that you call a show and say, but. Why, in slavery times, the plantation master said, if you had one drop of black blood, you were considered black. So I said to you, you fool. So you're using the rhetoric of slaveholders to tell me what racial connotation an individual holds? Are you crazy? Well, okay, yeah, you're crazy. Then you got Eric Holmes, you got a black president, a black attorney general, and it's still not enough. It's still we shall overcome. Now, when does it overcome already? When do I stop hearing this garbage? I'm sick of it. You know how many jobs I've lost to unqualified minorities? A lot of them. Just look around your country. And don't tell me we can't talk about it. You want to talk about race? Well, let's get it on, my friend. Let's have some affirmative action horror calls here on the Savage. About minorities who are given jobs that you were more qualified for. You got a 98 on the exam, they got a 48, and they were made the lieutenant. And you're the private. You want to talk about affirmative action horror stories? Call the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. Savage.
To get to the heart of this country, one must examine its racial soul. Though this nation has proudly thought of itself as an ethnic melting pot, in things racial, we have always been, and we, I believe, continue to be, in too many ways, essentially a nation of cowards. This is truly sad, given all that we as a nation went through during the civil rights struggle. It is hard for me to accept that the result of those efforts was to create an America that is more prosperous, more positively race conscious, and yet is voluntarily socially segregated.
Now here's the man who is the Attorney General of the United States, still marching around like he's an oppressed black man. Do you have any idea how disgusting this is? I think this man should be forced to resign. This man, as far as I am concerned, is so obsessed with race that he's not qualified to be attorney general. Now, we told you that His record was spotty. He released six Puerto Rican terrorists. He pardoned Mark Rich. He never should have been confirmed as Attorney General. But you went ahead and said give him a chance. Now here we are coming on a month of the administration, and right away calling the nation a nation of cowards. And he's saying the races are socially segregated. Well, let me remind you something, Mr. Holder. If you go to colleges today, there are black graduation ceremonies, Chicano graduation ceremonies, God knows what other ceremonies, and they are consciously done by the ethnic minorities who want nothing to do with the white people. You go into a dining room at universities, the blacks sit amongst themselves, the Hispanics amongst themselves, and so forth and so on, my friend. It has nothing to do with cowardice. It has to do with racism that's coming from the ethnic minorities, Mr. Holder. As a matter of fact, if there was a people meter that could be put upon people, I think you'd find a very high level of racial animosity within the ethnic minority communities. In fact, it would probably be much higher than it is amongst the European Americans, Mr. Holder. You are really an embarrassment to the position. And if this is what we're going to get out of the first month, I could just imagine what we're going to get out of the first year. John in Virginia Beach, you want to comment on that? Go ahead, please.
Yes, I have three comments about Mr. Holder. One, I find his conversation ludicrous because he is a man who has defined himself by his blackness, not by what he does. It's easy enough to find quotes. When he was the Attorney General under Clinton, you could see that even when the city of Los Angeles went to him and asked for relief on the federal litigation against the city because they were doing everything that they could do.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up on the cell phone. I know you have a good caller, okay? Again, I invited you before the break, before something interfered with my statement, to call with affirmative action horror stories. And let me repeat that. Affirmative action horror stories. I am particularly interested in hearing from white males who may have scored 95, 98 on exams for police, firemen, whatever, and only to see the job going to a less qualified woman or minority. I want you to call with it and let Mr. Holder hear about what the ethnic melting pot has wrought. And let Mr. Holder hear about the social segregation as a result of affirmative action. New York City, WOR. Jason, go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, you won't believe this one. I had a good friend in high school who was a white male who was extremely qualified to go to a United States military service academy. It was the Naval Academy, actually. And he got three nominations from both of our state senators and his local representative, which is unheard of. He had all three nominations. And he applied. A friend of his and a friend of mine in the same high school also applied, who was Hispanic. Now, we knew this guy personally. We knew virtually everything about the application. My friend had all the nominations, a higher SAT score, better grades, had, you know, clearly written a better essay, in my opinion, after I read them both. And guess who got in and guess who did not? And he never became an officer because of that, and this other person was let in when, by every metric conceivable, you know, the white male was more qualified.
My friend, it's called seeking the lowest common denominator. And I'm afraid to tell you what happens to a nation that permits this kind of racism to take over decision-making. It's not good for the nation. Thank you for the call. You want to talk about race? Mr. Holder said we're cowards. Our attorney general said we're a nation of cowards on racial issues. So I think that we should be brave today and talk about racial issues. So if you want to talk about affirmative action and what is done to you, go ahead. Let Mr. Holder see that you're not really a coward. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. There are other topics. Jamal in New Hampshire is calling about the statements in general by Holder. I think Holder should step down. This man is a divisive man. He's driving people apart, and I think he's bad for the nation. What about you, Jamal in New Hampshire? How about you? Go ahead, please.
Michael, I am so friggin' outraged. I'm a Gulf War veteran, the first war. My stepson, 15 months in Iraq, and we are absolutely disgusted. And, you know, we've been putting up enough with the crap that's been going on, the raping of this country the last 30 days, and this is it. This is where we draw the line. It's got to stop. I'm telling you, people talk revolution.
I think this country's been taken over by a racist gang, if you want to know the truth. And I want that to go out on the air. You can quote me on that. I am seeing a gang that took over this country, an incompetent gang of racists. Does that work for you?
You are spot on. Spot on.
I am fed up with this Obama gang. I don't want to hear any more of their crap about racism. The guy's president, his buddy's the attorney general, and they're still screaming, "We shall overcome. You're a racist nation."
Two black attorney generals, BET, United Negro College Funds, NAACP, Black History Month, the MLK holiday. Does it end?
No, it'll never end, my friend. It will never end because that's the racket. That's how it works. You understand how it works? The racket never ends, my friend. Thank you for the call. This is the last straw for me. There's only so much anybody can take. I've never seen anything like it. And if you want to hear what a racial coward is, you're not going to hear it on the show today. Eric Holder says we're a nation of cowards on racial issues. He then says no matter how far we've come, there is voluntary social segregation. I will remind him that colleges are socially segregated because the ethnic minorities want their own graduations, they want their own dining areas, and they want nothing to do with the European American. By and large, that's what's been going on. And if he doesn't understand that the minorities are segregating themselves on colleges, for example, then the man understands nothing, nothing whatsoever. How can this man act rationally as our attorney general for all of America when he obviously harbors such racial enmity towards white people? San Diego, Brian, you're on the Savage Nation.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I want to tell you, Dr. Savage, I was offended and outraged by his comments, and I'm a military vet of 20 years retired. And let me tell you something, sir. In 1978, I grew up in poor Mississippi. My dad was a truck driver. My mom stayed at home. We had no money. But I had honor rolls, and I wanted to go to junior college. I applied for every grant I could get my hands on and kept getting turned down left and right, left and right. But I managed to get to a junior college on my own money. I raised mm-hmm. up from working on farms. And whenever I'd sit in front of my dorm on Sunday evenings, the big Cadillacs would come rolling up, brand new Cadillacs. And I'm not a racist. This is just a fact.
No, stay on the line. He wants no racial cowardice. We'll give him racial bravery.
I bring greetings from President Obama, who has himself said and written about the importance of his time here in Indonesia as a young boy.
Islam, democracy, and modernity not only can coexist but thrive together.
To get to the heart of this country, one must examine its racial soul. Though this nation has proudly thought of itself as an ethnic melting pot, in things racial, we have always been, and we, I believe, continue to be, in too many ways, essentially a nation of cowards.
Ladies and gentlemen, did you expect the Attorney General of the United States to start provoking racial enmity? Did you expect him to provoke anger between the races? I never thought he was a very competent man. I thought he was a doctrinaire left-wing type of guy who was useful and put in there by certain, you know, powerful individuals. But I never thought that the man was this foolish as to start calling names within a few weeks of his appointment to the Attorney General's position. And I am telling you that if he wants racial bravery, he's going to have it in the Savage Nation. He says we are a nation of cowards on racial issues. I haven't any idea what he's talking about because I think the exact opposite is true. And I would invite people to call with their affirmative action horror stories. Because as we all know, everyone whispers it behind closed doors. They will whisper it as though it's a given, but that shows you how far you have fallen as a man. You have to start standing up to these race baiters and these haters. Here in California, we passed Proposition 8, which banned the use of race and sexual orientation and whatnot in the hiring and promotion of individuals. It has not stopped the Eric Holders of California from going behind the voters and using race and such for promotions and hiring. But I think it's time we put a stop to it. And I think we need to be racially brave and say enough is enough. That's the end of it. And if you think you're going to push reparations on us now, you're mistaken, because I think this man has a deeper message for us than this one. Something tells me there's a deeper agenda within the Obama administration that has yet to have seen the light of day. San Diego, Brian, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Like I was saying before, I made...
All right, so you were a poor kid, dirt poor Mississippi. You struggled with nothing. You got into community college. You got all sorts of good grades. And then you try to get into college. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, sir, on my own dollar. And then on Sunday evenings, I'd see these brand new Cadillacs pull up, and these African-American kids would get out. So I'd ask them. You know, I'd see them with the free lunch cards, and I'd ask them, well, how do you get a free lunch card? How can I get one of those? They tell me, oh, well, we get free room and board, we get free meal, we get free education, we get free everything. But I kept getting turned down over and over and over for grants, okay? And so I went to admin at the dean's office, and I asked them, what can somebody help me? Somebody please help me. And I had a black lady working in the office, and she leaned over to me and she said, hon, I'll be honest with you. You're getting turned down because you're white. And I went to my parents and I cried. And I said, why is this? What is wrong here? And my parents, they were racist. I'm not going to deny that, but I didn't want to have a racist. I don't want to have no racism in my heart. But my parents were very racist. And they were upset as to what was going on. And my dad told me, son, let's be honest. It's because you're white. It's that simple. So I did the honorable thing, and I went and joined the military. I proudly served 21 years, and I served with a lot of black folks and folks from all over the world. And I'm proud of that. And I'm not a racist, but I've been a victim of racism. And this guy, Holder, Mr. Holder, if you're listening...
Yeah.
You look
yes.
me in the eye and tell me I'm a coward, and I'll punch your lights out, you son of a gun.
Well, I tell you the truth. It was one of the most outrageous things an attorney general has said in the history of America, incidentally. Brian. Brian, are you doing okay now? I mean, in life, are you okay now? You're retired, I assume? You're out of the military?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. You know what? I'm in San Diego, and guess what? I'm moving back to Mississippi at the end of this month, and I'm going to grow me some vegetables. I'm going to farm, and I'm putting up a sign on my property that says, trespassers will be shot. Anybody come on my property, I'm going to kill them. I want to be left alone, and I want society to leave me alone. I just stay away from me. I'm going to mind my
own. It's interesting. You're actually exhibiting the symptoms of individualism that were reflected by Henry David Thoreau, where he said, you know what? Leave me alone. Just leave me alone. Let me do my own thing. But here's an example of society tampering not only with your livelihood, they're tampering with your soul right now, Brian. That's the problem here. That's why we're all sick of this already. We're only 1 month into the new Obama administration, and we're starting to feel the rumblings of an America that none of us ever thought would emerge. It's happening on the Chicago Board of Trade. They're revolting against him. It's happening on talk radio. The people are standing up to these people. And I don't know when in the world the Democrats are going to understand what's coming. You know what's coming, my friend? Michael Savage is going to make a prediction. I predict the Democrats are going to lose across the board during the next election. There is going to be a wholesale slaughter in terms of the polls. They're going to be thrown out on their keisters. The American people did not vote for this kind of change. They did not vote for in-your-face street agitators in high positions. Let me put it to you that way. Thanks for the call. Now let's go to my home city of San Francisco. Jeff in San Francisco, KNEW, do you have an affirmative action horror story? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I applied to the Oakland Police Department about 10 years ago. I had been out of the military for a while. I was an Army sergeant. I'm a former, I'm a Berkeley grad, held a top secret mm-hmm. code word clearance. I was an NRA pistol instructor, PT
wow.
max. The whole time. Yeah, and I maxed their academic test, maxed their physical
test. Oh, well, you
test.
Were immediately disqualified for San Francisco.
Oh, no.
As you well know, I mean, the police chief... can't fire a gun, didn't pass the pistol test. They can't find a hat small enough to fit in her head. And now they're replacing her, Jeff. So you're highly unqualified to be a cop in San Francisco.
Well, this was Oakland, but they'd winnowed it down to, you know, they started out with maybe 1,000 people, you know, for like 100 jobs, and they had winnowed it down, and all the way to the, well, you finally get to the civilian review board to interview you, and I walked into the room, and they were all racial minorities, and there was an Asian, old Asian man there, and the first word out of his mouth was, "You're white, you don't live here, you can't understand the neighborhood. What business do you even have applying for this job?"
What a racist little skunk.
And with that, I just...
So let me... Jeff, what did you do as a result of being rejected by the Oakland PD? Tell me what you did.
I was thinking about, because I'd come into some money, and I wasn't having to work my... job anymore, and so I was thinking, like, well, this would be a good chance to, you know, really, you know, serve the community, and I'd wanted to be a cop for a long time, and I just said, well, this is probably a good thing, you know, it's probably more.
No, but I'm saying, but because they turned you down, did you not go into police work? Did you just retire? Is that it?
I just said, screw this, you know, who needs this? I'm a quality.
No, but I'm saying I'm saying you didn't work as a result.
Oh no, yeah, I didn't really have to at that point was a thing. I didn't have to work anymore.
Listen, as far as I'm concerned, the police should give a triple plus to any returning military veteran. Any police department should put the military at the top of the list for 5 reasons, and they're all obvious. Number one, they serve the country and risk their lives. That's number one. I don't care what the color is. Number two, they are trained in combat. They're more likely to do the right thing in an emergency situation than those not trained in the military. Okay? So why in the world we're not seeing a call for putting military vets at the top of the list of hiring is pretty clear to me. And that is because most of the veterans are white. You want to have a racially sensitive conversation? Most of the returning combat veterans from the Iraq and Afghan theaters are white males, and that is why they do not want to give them priority in hiring of police departments, Jeff. It's still going on. So if Attorney General Holder would like to have a racially open conversation, we're having it, wouldn't you say, Jeff?
Yeah, I'd say so. If you go look, there's a website that tracks all of the Iraq War and Afghanistan War killed in action, and you'll see that it's 75%. White, non-mixed race, and that's a little disproportionately
high.
Boy,
that's embarrassing, Jeff. That's an embarrassing statistic.
Yeah, and what's going to happen?
75% of those who have died in these theaters of operation are European-Americans. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
That's a very embarrassing statistic. Maybe it ought to be sent to Attorney General Holder, who's very interested in data management. He's as good as the Third Reich in finding out people's racial composition for hiring, for firing, for promotion. Maybe you ought to look into the number of people who died in the war. It may interest him. Thanks for the call. So let's have it. Let's get it on. Let's get it on. The Attorney General says that we're racial cowards. Let's show him we're not. Let's dare to speak the truth. Let's talk truth to power. He's got the power. We have no power. All we have is the truth. So let's get it on. Let's have the conversation. Have you been discriminated against? Call the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. How do you feel about the Obama administration playing the race card now within the first month? How do you feel about that? Feel good about it? No, you shouldn't feel good about it. Now, let's talk about the housing bailout. Is there a racial component in the housing bailout where Obama, the financial genius, who, by the way, never met a payroll, so far as I know, Obama has never had a business, so he doesn't even understand what red tape is. He's created the red tape. He's not how to navigate it. Now, there's a big difference between creating the red tape and navigating the red tape, but the president hasn't learned that. He's learning on the job. They're very good at creating red tape, so to speak, but they're not good at navigating it. That's for you to do. You're the sucker. I'm the sucker. Now, I ask you something. If a man has never met a payroll, how can he understand those of you who do meet payrolls every day? The man has never held employees and how to be responsible for them by meeting a payroll. Everything he's ever done has been through grants and things of that nature, or government jobs. And now he's managing the largest private economy in the world. And what he's doing is trying to turn it into a state-managed economy, because that's something the neo-Marxist understands. You're watching the shakedown of America. And let's talk about the shakedown of America by the gang that is running the country. We have a gang of neo-Marxists running America, in my opinion. If it walks like one, if it talks like one, if it acts like one, it is one. I don't need the definition to be a screaming headline in the New York Times. You heard it on the Savage Nation. These people are dragging us to a Cuba-style economy. And that is why the guy freaked out today on the Chicago Board of Exchange. He sees it coming. The market doesn't like Obama. The market is very emotional. The market knows this man is destroying the economy, not creating anything new. It came out today that a very large amount of money is going for the homeless around America. Now, so far as I know, the homeless don't work. So far as I know, there's not going to be much job creation in spreading over $1 billion amongst the homeless dregs of society. So again, you were lied to by Obama when he said he was using this to create jobs. He was not using this stimulus package to create jobs. He was using it to push forward the neo-Marxist or liberal agenda. I'll be right back. Savage. So Obama is going to solve the problem through this draconian forcing you to pay for your neighbor's mortgage. So the question is, what percent of the failed mortgages are owned by racial minorities, illegal immigrants, and such? Well, it's very hard to find the answers because the government's very good on statistics when they use them against the white male. But surprisingly, they don't have many statistics on this. However, we can draw some conclusions by some geography here. Let us look at most of the areas hardest hit by the foreclosure wave in the state of California where I happen to live. The areas most hit by the foreclosure wave, meaning people going belly up on their mortgages, are in Stockton, San Joaquin Valley, Loudoun County, Virginia, and such, Las Vegas and Phoenix, right? Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Nevada, Stockton and San Joaquin Valley, Loudoun County, Virginia, happen to be some of the nation's sanctuaries for illegal aliens. Did you know that 50% of the mortgages to Hispanics were subprime mortgages? They were forced the banks were forced to give them loans. Did you know that 50% of the mortgages to Hispanics are subprime mortgages? And a quarter of all those subprime loans are in default and foreclosure. Now, you can call it racist if you wish, and of course, if you're a racist like Eric Holder, that would be seen as racist, what I just said. But if you want to look at the facts objectively, I don't see where you can put race into this, other than to conclude that the government itself is the biggest race monger in the world by forcing banks, number one, to grant loans to unqualified people only based on race and their so-called immigration status. So the fact of the matter is, there it is. I've showed you the geography, and that's the reality. And you're not going to read about this or hear about this in too many places, but it's deeply tied into the trouble we are in today. This is not to say that the white men on Wall Street were not the biggest recipients of the criminal money. They were. Make no mistake about it. The gangsters on Wall Street, who I have criticized repeatedly, did not care who they were giving the mortgages to because they made money by selling the mortgages. And in terms of loans in general to failed businesses or shady businesses, the investment banks really didn't care who they were giving money to during the boom phase because these guys made their money on every loan they made. All they did was flip the loan and move on to the next, you know, loan. So there's enough blame to go around. However, if you want to have an honest racial conversation, let's have it. And that's why we're having it right now. New York City, WOR, Estelle, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I've been a fan of yours for the longest time, and I applaud you for speaking your mind because I know there are a lot of white people out there who are so afraid to make critical judgments publicly against blacks or other minorities. But the reason why a guy like Holder can make these kind of bold and arrogant statements, I blame it partially on these white liberals, especially from the Democratic Party, who always have to act like they're the mouthpieces for blacks and minorities. And I didn't vote for Barack Obama because, personally, I don't really feel this man had anything to offer. To this very day, I don't understand why he's in the Oval Office. But again, I blame the white liberals for this.
Well, they're the enablers. There's no question about it. They are the enablers. They're Let us put it to you this way. I know you from previous calls. I think that you're an African-American woman. Is that correct?
Yes.
So, I mean, you're walking a very tough line right now. And I understand that. I bet you're called names by some of your...
Cannot make any kind of sound judgments against this man or anybody who's a liberal, who's black, who's Latino. But from where I'm sitting, I really do believe that we're headed for trouble, because I really don't see how Americans could just sit back and accept this and consistently make excuses for this man. I mean, I don't know what else...
Well, I'd like to know when the people are going to wake up. I think we've seen the beginning of the Tea Party today. When we see the regular staid, straight-up CNBC guys cracking up on the Chicago Board of Trade and saying enough is enough, we're becoming Cuba, and to the loud cheers of the traders on the floor, what does that tell you?
Exactly.
And then when you hear Eric Holder sitting there like pontificating in his big chair there saying we're a bunch of racists, I mean, what is that all about? Is that an appropriate comment for an attorney general?
No, but he can get away with it because, as I said, the white liberals are giving him a pass. The media says nothing because...
They're going to have them on their shows, and they're going to sit there kissing his behind, asking him to explain what he meant, trying to put a good face on it, and say, Well, thank you, Mr. Holder. We'll be right back. You know what's coming.
Right, and again, I applaud your callers because they're not afraid. They're finally having a chance. They have a floor to speak their mind. Because
well, how long are we going to have this floor, Estelle, is the question. How long are we going to have the ability to let it all hang out, as Eric Holder would like, is the question. We don't know, Estelle. I don't know. I don't have the answer. Thank you for the call. Green Bay, Wisconsin, Alonzo, go ahead, please. Quickly, fire away.
Hey, Mike. I just called to say I'm a black male. I totally agree with you. I am sick and tired of the race card being played. Obama is the most powerful
We didn't
man.
Hear this for 8 years. You know, Bush, as bad as he was, I never heard any racist comments like this coming out of him.
There's no reason for any racial...
Why is it that we've come so far as people in this country where this was tamped down? Why are they doing this?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Of this country, one must examine its racial soul. Though this nation has proudly thought of itself as a ethnic melting pot, in things racial, we have always been, and we, I believe, continue to be, in too many ways, essentially a nation of cowards. Though race-related issues continue to occupy a significant portion of our political discussion, and though there remain many unresolved racial issues in this nation, we, average Americans, simply do not talk enough with each other about things racial.
Well, he's calling himself an average American when he's the highest law enforcement official in America. But all right, that's Attorney General Eric Holder, who's saying we're a nation of cowards on racial issues because we don't talk with each other enough about things racial. So we're going to do what Eric Holder wants, and we're going to talk about things racial today in the Savage Nation. And the reason we're going to do it is because we can't afford to let this band of incompetent Marxists divide this country. I am of a certain age. I grew up in this country when things were much different. And fortunately, they changed for the better. I watched people who were of different races truly be afraid to be in the same room with each other. And I saw that change in my lifetime. I grew up in a multiracial environment. I'm not saying that I had many ethnic minorities that were not of my particular group over to dinner. That's irrelevant. What's relevant is we went to school together, we talked together, we had fun together. In fact, I looked at my high school yearbook. It's funny this came up today. I graduated high school a very long time ago. I think it was 1959. And I went and got my high school yearbook from Jamaica High School in Queens, New York. I got it out the other day and I started looking at the names. Half the kids I don't remember. And it's funny, a couple of the kids were black kids who were my friends. I didn't even remember. I don't remember any of the friends. It was so long ago. I didn't remember I had black friends in high school. Apparently I had black friends in high school any more than I remembered white friends in high school. I don't remember them. It's so long ago. You know, and I wish you luck, Mike, this and that. So what I'm saying is, in the 60s, things were terrible. I remember when Martin Luther King marched and spoke in this country. I was a very young social worker on the Upper West Side of New York. And I had to go into minority homes, and I had to write checks for welfare recipients. New York Department of Welfare, they called it then. Then 1984 arrived on the scene, and they started using doublespeak. It was no longer called the New York Department of Welfare. Because I don't know what they call it today. And they were called clients. I love that. I had to write checks for these people, and many of them were white and black and Hispanic, whatever. They were poor. But they were called my clients. I was making $5,300 a year as a worker with a college degree, and I had to write checks to my clients, in some cases for more money than that, to give them startup money for to setting up a household while I was sleeping on a mattress with two milk cartons as night tables because I couldn't afford money to buy myself furniture. But I had to provide them with money for furniture, the welfare recipients, because according to the New York Department of Welfare, any dignified human being needed a nightstand and a coffee table and whatnot. So I had to write checks for $3,700 from the city of New York. So I saw all of that. Then I saw Martin Luther King's speech. I was there when he spoke outside the UN. I was moved by him. I thought he was a great man. I was stirred by his speech. He had a great voice. He was speaking for the right thing. He did the right thing. I saw racial hatred. I saw a bunch of people who hated him. I saw hate like I'd never seen in my life. Frankly, I was offended by the hate. It didn't appeal to me. I don't like seeing mobs that hate another race for any reason. And now we move ahead. We have the civil rights movement. We have the Great Society. We have the integration of the races to the point where we have a black president, a black attorney general. And lo and behold, if we wake up, who's fanning the flames of racial enmity? I ask you, was it George Bush? No. Was it any of the attorney generals under George Bush? No. Who is fanning the flames of racial enmity? None other than a black attorney general. Now, you say this was a slip of the tongue. He didn't mean anything by it. All right, you could give him the benefit of the doubt. You could do that. But Eric Holder doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt. You see, Eric Holder released six Puerto Rican terrorists. Eric Holder pardoned Mark Rich. Eric Holder has always been very interested in things racial. And it seems to me that's too much of a focus for an attorney general. Oh, maybe he should be running the civil rights division because that's what they're focused on. But I don't think this guy realizes he's no longer running the civil rights division of the attorney general's office. He's now the attorney general for all of us, not just for minorities. I don't think Eric Holder understands what position he is in. He wants us to have a mature, open discussion about race. So we're talking today on the Savage Nation about racial relations. And what's troubling me and what's bothering me is that I think the races get along better today in this country than they've ever gotten along. After so many years of horror in this country, are things perfect? No, they're not perfect. Do people harbor racism? Of course they do. Every race does. Every race is racist. That's what I discovered in my life. You go behind closed doors in any home that's of any group. The Chinese think they're superior to the Koreans. The Koreans think they're superior to the Taiwan. You go down the list. You know I'm telling the truth. That's my greatest protection. My greatest protection is truth right here because I know I'm right and they know I'm right. I'm not making anything up. Or maybe it's politically embarrassing to say the things that I'm saying today for some, but it's not exactly embarrassing because it's true. It would be embarrassing if it was untrue. You go behind the homes of people of certain ethnic groups, they always bicker and say they're better than everybody else. I know how it works. And it can be embarrassing if you're a person who doesn't want to live in that skewed, limited world. So you go out into the bigger world and you walk the streets of a big city and you see people of different races. I live in San Francisco. It's a multiracial city where if you walk downtown, for example, in a financial district after work, it's about 95% non-white. The workers, that is. The white guys, I guess, take the elevators down to their cars. I don't know. It's 95% not white. No big deal. Go in the bars. Is this some bars? People are drinking and smoking, and no one's paying much attention to what color their skin is or what their ethnic background is. It's truly a multiracial city. In that regard, it's an easy place to be, and it's a good place to be. Why in the world Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States of America, would want to upset this relative harmony and think he can make it perfect is beyond me, other than it goes to the big problem we're having with the entire amateur hour of the Obama administration. It seems to me none of them are ready for prime time. It seems to me from Timothy Geithner in the Treasury Department, who doesn't really have a plan to save the economy, up and down the line, you see people who are sort of faking it till they make it. Well, we don't have the time for this. We can't have an amateur hour much longer in this country. We have a financial meltdown, and they've not fixed the financial meltdown. They made it worse, as we all know. The average person knows you don't spend your way out of a recession. You don't do that. That's not the way it works. It's never worked before. You want to talk about the state putting money into infrastructure and whether it works? Well, look at what Japan did in the 80s during their recession. The government of Japan pumped money into infrastructure projects, and it worked temporarily, but then when the government money ran out, the recession reemerged. The cancer came back. It's the same approach that the AMA uses in all diseases. They try to use chemotherapy. They try to use radiation. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. See, I'm a believer in holistic medicine. I say you got to cure cancer from the inside out, not from the outside in. I'll be right back. Savage. You know what I think I'm going to do during the next break? I think... First of all, this is going to be the last segment on this. I think that you know my position. I know yours. I think Eric Holder made a big mistake, and it shows that he's not really acting like the Attorney General. He's acting like the head of the Civil Rights Division under Bill Clinton. The man really ought to step up to the bigger job, which is Attorney General for the entire nation, not an Assistant Attorney General for racial minorities. But he's still acting as though he's giving speeches at Georgetown or at Harvard or God knows where. And he ought to stop it. This is not good for this country. But I want to go to a point I missed before. I said, is it a mistake? Should we just give him a credit? You know, people make mistakes. I do it sometimes. People take me out of context. So it does happen. Did he really mean that we are a nation of cowards? Or did he use an inappropriate number of words here that came together in the wrong way? What does he really mean? So you could say, let's give him a benefit of the doubt. Well, I don't know that we should. Because he has a very spotty history, number one. Number two, there's an edgy part of all of this that bothers me very deeply that I have to express to you. I believe that these students of Saul Alinsky, Eric Holder is one of them, Barack Obama is another, they learned how to bring about a revolution in a country. And one of the principal methods of bringing about the revolution that they're intending upon is to get in the face of the opposition and to cause dissension. They actually want social dissension. I don't think you understand that this is part of a playbook. Now, that's another theory that remains to be proven or disproven. Take it for what it is. But these people involved in this administration, when I say these people, white and black alike, these Marxist people, and there are many of them, make no mistake about it. I don't care what they say about the administration in any newspapers. They're irrelevant. They've become irrelevant. The people are not buying these papers anymore. I am giving you an educated man's opinion. Take it or leave it for what it is. I do not believe we should give these people, these Marxist people, the benefit of the doubt. They are actually playing out Saul Alinsky's game plan. Get in the face of the opposition, agitate them, and so forth and so on. In other words, the street agitator, Barack Obama, and his minions are using all the techniques of community organizers now that they're running the country. That's my opinion, and I'll open it up to your discussions. New York City, Bill, WOR, go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. My name's Bill, and I work in the medical field, and I just want to say you're lightning in a bottle. I mean, I'm watching this guy, Eric Holder. It seems like he's marshaling the rabble-rousing forces. I work in dialysis, and we have illegal aliens in every clinic dialyzing, sapping the system. They work as porters, sapping the system. That's a job that somebody else could be doing rather mm-hmm. than them remitting that money back to their country tax-free. They're right. outsourced. It's ridiculous. It's Cuban-style medicine. You go to take a mop to clean up blood, and you hear that belongs to La Compañía. What do I do?
Wait a minute. You're in the medical field yourself, Bill?
Yes. I work in dialysis. We have technicians, Mike. They can't even say dialyze. I'm dialysizing the patient.
Boy, are there English-speaking people who would take these jobs?
Yeah. That's what my father did for a second job his whole life to raise me. Worked 40 hours for the county, mops, everything in sight, from churches to office buildings, insurance companies. That's how you get ahead. I've always had three or four jobs. I went to Queens College like you did. I left.
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, Bill, I look back upon my life. It's been a very long road. I mean, I had to crawl on glass. I had to run through fire to get where I am today. No one gave me anything, Bill. It's not because I'm white. It was white men who stood in my way, not black men. And the white men used minorities, by the way, to keep me down. Let me put it to you that way. The whites who didn't want me to advance used minorities as an excuse to do it. I don't think you understand what I'm saying. I think you do understand what I'm saying. I'll give you an example. In the universities, they were all old white males running the departments that I were in. And when it came time for them to retire, they didn't want bright young white males like me around them who would give them a run for their money. They wanted people that they could patronize, who would sort of look the other way if they even knew what was going on. And do you know what these white male professors at Berkeley did soon thereafter? They extended the retirement age so they can keep their jobs. And then when that went out, you know what they did? They signed on as consultants and stayed on as department chairman in order to keep working the system. They never wanted to leave their jobs and let the next generation have their chance. And so they were very happy with affirmative action, Bill. It was mainly white male liberals who were using the system, who frankly wanted the affirmative action in order to have less competition, is how I see it, Bill.
Well, they're legislative champions, Michael. I have to look at their posters every day. You know, they at our work, they ask us to lobby Congress to take more money out of our own pockets through taxes to pay for the illegal aliens. I compete with them on a daily basis. You know, normally a biomed would do one clinic. He'd calibrate all of the machines to within a 20 millimeter of mercury tolerance on pressure, change light bulbs, change ceiling tiles, and generally do whatever plumbing work. Now, they clean, they do the ceiling tiles, and I have to handle three, four, sometimes five clinics for the price of one.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me you're also mopping floors?
Oh, sure. Sure, you have to do everything.
Wait a minute, you're telling me you mop a floor and you work on the equipment?
Absolutely, Mike. Let's put it this way. You have people that operate the machines that I wouldn't let work in a Burger King.
I had no idea. No, I had no idea. This is unbelievable. This is worse than the doctor and the devils. I hadn't any idea that dialysis machines are being operated by people who they can't even read the dials.
Mike, go and look into it in Arizona where they're closing clinics left and right because they can't afford to stay open due to the illegal alien burden. It's unbelievable.
Oh, when you say the burden of them coming and using, you mean demanding to be treated for free? Is that what you're saying on top of it all?
Sure, Mike.
Of course. That's why you need an open border. That's why you need a porous border. So they can get a gold-plated medical care system, even though they didn't put a nickel into the system. Bill, the entire country seems to be slipping out underneath my feet. I worked all my life. I never thought I'd live to see the day that such incompetence would be at every corner of our society, not only on the top but also on the bottom. God bless you. Thanks for calling. Now, if you think I just want to sit here and complain, you're mistaken. I don't. But if you want to just complain, that's okay. And you could do it by calling 1-800-449-8255. But please, let's broaden this up a little bit. Let's move out of this topic. Let's move to other topics. Surely there's something else on your mind, isn't there? No, there isn't. Because Eric Holder said there isn't. He said that you're a racial coward. You refuse to discuss things racial. So I think maybe we should cease being cowards and continue to. You don't want to talk about rogue financier found in Virginia or weird jungle love behind chimp tragedy. You want to talk about that nut bar? How about the real Bill Moyers, who is, it is found by new FBI files, sought about whether people were homosexuals for his boss, Mr. Sanctimonious Savage. Bill Moyers.
This is America. How many of you people want to pay for your neighbor's mortgage that has an extra bathroom and can't pay their bills? Raise their hand.
How about we all...
President Obama, are you listening?
How about we all stop paying our mortgage? It's a moral hazard.
This is like mob rule here. I'm getting scared.
Cuba used to have mansions and a relatively decent economy. They moved from the individual to the collective. Now they're driving 54 Chevys. Maybe the last great car to come out of Detroit.
Well, you know, it's starting to happen. The people are finally recognizing that these people, the entire administration, we're moving out of race now into incompetence itself, into an administration that's kind of doing it on the fly, making it up as they go along. You saw the horrendous speech by Tim Geithner. I mean, the market took a dump right after he gave his speech. They said, are you kidding? This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. He looks like a Peace Corps guy. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's a front man. The man was in the Federal Reserve while the market melted down. So they put him now, the stooge in the Treasury. So today, finally, one of the anchors for CNBC, Rick Santelli, is at the Chicago Stock Exchange. And the Chicago Stock Exchange traders jump up against the stimulus. And then they call for a new Tea Party. Where's the new Tea Party one?
Can we have
the
Tea Party? They're thinking of having a Chicago Tea Party in July. All you capitalists that want to show up to Lake Michigan, I'm going to start organizing.
What are you dumping in this time? How's this, Mark?
I'm going to be dumping in some derivative securities.
Santinelli says we're thinking of having a Chicago Tea Party in July. All the capitalists who want to show Lake Michigan we're going to do this will dump in derivative securities. Let's hear clip 12.
Senator Santelli, the junior senator from Illinois. It's a possibility. I'm just saying.
Do you think I want to take a shower every hour? The last place I'm ever going to live or work is D.C.
Have you raised any money for Blago?
No, but I think that somebody's going to have to start raising money for us.
Now listen to clip 13.
They're pretty much of the notion that you can't buy your way into prosperity, and if the multiplier that all of these Washington economists are selling us is over one, that we never have to worry about the economy again. The government should spend $1 trillion an hour because we'll get 1.5 trillion back.
Here's a man who knows what's going on. Now, I suspect that the owner of General Electric, which owns CNBC, a gentleman by the name of Mr. Immelt, who received is going to receive a monster amount of money through the stimulus so-called plan for his GE Capital. Something tells me Rick Santelli is going to be looking for a job in, shall I say, talk radio? New York City, Lourdes, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I like to say that Eric Holder is the coward, since he likes going, ordering raids into people's homes and pointing guns at children.
Well, wait a minute. Whoa. What did he do in that regard? What was he responsible for?
The pre-dawn raid on Elian Gonzalez's house, and he also enabled a cover-up
The pre-dawn raid on Elian Gonzalez's house was organized by him or by Janet Reno?
By Janet Reno, but he gave the okay for the raid.
Well, I guess it was the civil rights of the Cuban Revolution that he was protecting, not the rights of Elian Gonzalez, who's never been seen again.
He's going to Cuba.
I hear you. Yeah, no, I haven't forgotten it either. People have long memories. Chicago, TJ, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael. Glad, yes. I've been trying to get through since the start of the show. You're talking to a pissed-off soldier. Michael, I'm going to be 75 years young next month.
God bless you.
I was there 16 months. I was a medic. A lot of cowards died around me, Michael. A lot of cowards. 18 and not Bob Mash. That's all a joke, Mash. They should have been.
No. I don't know what you know, TJ, but I had a friend years ago who I had a friend, TJ, I don't want to override what you saw and what your rage is. He fought in Korea at the Incheon Reservoir. He had a bag on the side of his body for the rest of his life because he had a bayonet slice through his guts. So I pretty much know what you're talking about.
Sir, you're right. Let me tell you, I have a...
I hope you're editing this guy. It's a good thing you're editing this, man, because the American people... I would really enjoy it. If you could only hear what this old veteran has to say, I think you'd really enjoy radio today. But unfortunately, we cannot permit him to go out on the air. TJ, what part of what Holder said is it that's making you so angry?
I love your book. I loved your book.
But wait, TJ, what part of what Eric Holder said got your ire up today?
A coward. Calling us a coward. He called me a coward. That's the way I look at it. That's the way I look at it, sir. He called me a coward. I was protecting his mama and his papa's and his grandpapa and his grandma's butt, okay? And he calls me a coward?
TJ, okay. You're a great man, and you know what? I got to send you some gift. You got the book. What can I send you? You know what's a good gift, TJ? The cup, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. Have you gotten one of those yet?
Children.
No, TJ, can you hear me or not?
Yes, sir.
Have you gotten the cup, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, yet from me?
No, sir, I haven't.
All right, you know, I'm going to send you one because I'll tell you why. They're so heavy that if you throw it on the floor, it'll either bounce or break something. It's a great coffee cup for a 75-year-old veteran who has more life in him than most 20-year-olds. So, TJ, please stay on the line. From Chicago. Guys, did you hang up on him? I'll kill you if you hung up on him. Get his address, send it over to my fulfillment house, and tell him to send TJ one free cup. Great man. Country has a lot of people in it that are so wonderful, truthfully. Chicago, Keith, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'm a doctor. Back in the 1980s, I was a chief resident in a training program, and mm-hmm. as part of my duties, I was assigned an African American second year resident to oversee and teach. Mm-hmm. About 5 weeks into the 10-week course, second year resident, never showed up to a single teaching experience. Didn't show up for any of the experience whatsoever. And I was told by the head of the department that I needed to give her a grade for the first 5 weeks. And I said, well, that's easy. She gets a zero. And he calls me and he says, you can't give her a zero. And I said, what do you mean? I said, let me explain the circumstances. I called her repeatedly, asked her to show up. She said she had no need to show up. Mm. And she said she had already knew everything that was being taught. And I said, well,
oh,
that's
my
great.
God.
But I'm not going to give her any grade other than a zero. That's the grade she earned. And he told me, well, you can't do that. And I said, well, you know what? And this is for Eric Holder. I said, I'm not going to give her a grade, and you can strip me of my chief residency position. And they did. And so I just want to tell Eric Holder that I was not a coward when faced with this issue.
Wow. You actually gave up a residency on principle?
And furthermore, then I looked into this student.
Wait a minute. You're not describing Jocelyn Elder, are you?
Well, someone just like that. There's a real kicker to this story. Just a couple little facts. I looked into her record because I had access to her file, being the chief resident, found out that she had never passed Boards Part 1, which is a requirement to get out of medical school. She never passed Boards Part 2, which is a requirement to become a second-year resident, but was pushed on through because of affirmative action. And the big kicker of the story is about 4 or 5 months ago, right before Obama was elected, I'm sitting in a department meeting at the hospital I'm at, and who walks in but this resident? And the first thing that they announce is that, welcome to the department, and we need to, this is a special superstar we have here because she has just been elected as the state's head of our specialty area. And I thought,
you know, it's, you know, look, I hear you, Keith. And so Mr. Holder says we're cowards because we don't talk enough about racial issues. I think it's very healthy for us to talk about it. And that's why we're doing it. But of course, this is the embarrassing part of the conversation for him, isn't it?
I don't think they're interested in really talking the truth about it. They're interested in lecturing to us and propagandizing us, but they're not.
Keith, you're old enough to know what I'm going to say. I don't think many listeners do. During the revolution in China under Mao Zedong, they went into the hospitals, the young Maoist revolutionaries, and they took the doctors out of the surgical wards and put them in the laundry because they wanted a real revolution. And they said every doctor was a bourgeois. They made them go to work in the laundry if they didn't outright kill them. And they took the girls out of the laundry in China and put them into the surgical wards and said, you are now a surgeon. When the little young laundresses said, wait a minute, we don't know how to be surgeons, they accused them of being counter-revolutionaries. And they said, you will be a surgeon whether you want to be or not. We are, in essence, in a slow-burning Maoist revolution in this country. What worries me deeply is that this gang that has taken over America, either knowingly or unknowingly, seems to be catalyzing this Maoist revolution. That is what worries me very deeply, Keith.
Well, the revolution that I'm going to join is Rick Santelli's revolution in Lake Michigan in July. I'll be there.
So I hope that you, after losing your residency, obviously you didn't leave the profession.
No. I just moved to a different residency.
It's heartbreaking. It's just heartbreaking, Keith. People don't understand what sacrifices individuals make all along the way for principle. I wish I could say I did exactly the same. I didn't. I lost a fellowship because I wouldn't kill lab animals. I mean, it's quite different than what you did. I had a professor, also a little dictator, a white guy, who said to me, you're going to kill these animals. And I said, I'm not going to kill them. And he knew I had nothing. I was 6,000 miles away from home. No, I was 9,000 miles away from home. I had nothing. He said to me, well, if you don't kill these mice every day as your job, you're going to lose your fellowship in pharmacology. I said, well, goodbye. He said, well, you lost your fellowship. And I moved over to botany because I figured there's no animals to kill in botany. That's how I got into herbal medicine. Anyway, that's life. Things happen. If you stand up for yourself, you lose. What do you think? You think it's Mickey Mouse? See, what you don't understand is that when you do the right thing, you often lose for it. You don't win. There's no reward for it. It's just that you have to live with it. That's all. And if you feel better about yourself having had principle, that's your victory. You know, when the Pope, I think it was the Pope who said the other day to Nancy Pelosi about the sanctity of life. I think it was the Pope the other day who said that if people live only for material things, that's a very sad thing, that we become obviously too materialistic. We've heard that for 100 years now, 50 years now, which is true. But it's also true in reverse, which is that if you only live for principle, you can wind up with nothing. You know, there's the opposite side of it, too. You could have your honor and your dignity and wind up with nothing. So life is very complicated. There's no clear answer. Every situation deserves your attention. And there's no one up in heaven to give you a straight answer about what the right thing is to do. You have to search your own heart and, frankly, go to the Bible where it says a still small voice. I'll be right back. Savage. California criminals called legislators approved a new budget with a several billion-dollar tax increase, and my prediction is the state is going to melt down at an even more rapid rate as thousands, not hundreds of thousands, but thousands of the top tax earners and business owners leave this state. And you're going to hear a giant whooshing sound as they leave the state for Nevada, for example, or states that are more friendly to government. This state has become, in essence, a sort of quasi-Marxist state under Schwarzenegger. They won't cut one nickel in services to illegal aliens. Not one penny of this budget would they dare touch the sacred cow of illegal aliens. And they think that this is going to go on, this party. They're mistaken. It's going to wind up like Cuba here. Here's Steinberg, Daryl Steinberg, Democrat Sacramento, Senate President Pro Tem, whatever that means. Daryl Steinberg, guarantee you the man never ran a hot dog stand. But genius just passed a new bill. $41 billion budget deficit. How much of it is going to pay for illegal aliens? Estimates range from $20 to $30 billion. Not one nickel has been cut out of the budget in hospitalization, medical care for illegals, non-citizens. Not one nickel has been taken out of the state budget targeted specifically at non-citizen children. Not one nickel has been taken out of the state budget targeted against paying money for housing for illegal aliens, legal services for illegal aliens, not one penny. But instead, they're going to raise personal income taxes, state sales tax, and such. And so there it is. And Schwarzenegger, or some governor he has turned out to be. That's where we are in the state of California. The ex-Golden State is now a broken state. And that's it. There is no conservative, there's no fiscal conservatism anywhere. It is all fiscal socialism, in some cases fiscal Marxism. I called Bush a fiscal socialist. Little did I know he was more conservative than even I thought compared to what's going on. And it's just beginning. It's only a month into this administration here in the nation as a whole. And already racism is being stirred up. A little Coleman lighter fuel he had to throw on today to go with it. And where's the great one? Where's the anointed one? Where's the Messiah? He's in Canada assuring the Canadian goofball that runs that country that buy American didn't really mean buy American. That although he ran on a platform of making sure that American jobs would be saved, the anointed one is telling the goofball who runs Canada that he really didn't mean buy American. That in fact, they shouldn't buy American. I'm quite surprised that the wonderful people around our government didn't put a clause in that says you cannot buy anything made in America, that you must buy it from Canada, China, Belgium, Lithuania, whatever, anywhere but American, with the traitors running everything, with the Benedict Arnolds running this country and this economy. I'm surprised they permit any product from America to be bought with the so-called porculus money. But all right, that's it. We know the scammer's been found. That's the big news. I had it up today on michaelsavage.com. WorldNet Daily has done the best job. Savage goes on offense and fairness doctrine battle. They did the best job of the press release with the Thomas More Center. And I highly recommend that you read it and actually print it up and save it. Oh, yes, the UN made a whoops, a little mistake. The UN now admits that Iran does hold enough uranium for only one nuclear bomb. So, well, they made a mistake. They weren't really lying at the UN. They were busy looking for prostitutes all over the world with government money, and they weren't focused too much on their job. And in the midst of getting drunk and using drugs, the diplomats, and getting hookers, they were looking into how much uranium Iran had. They made a little mistake. They were impaired. But since we can't be too judgmental, we really shouldn't judge the individuals at the United Nations who made this mistake, because we don't want to be illiberal, and we don't want to be judgmental. You understand that? We can't be judgmental. And it goes to the monkey case in Connecticut. Her friends came over, and they said that they were uncomfortable with her relationship with the monkey. Lobster, steak, red wine, Carvel. They were uncomfortable with the baths. The monkey combed her hair. They were uncomfortable. But apparently the mental disorder of liberalism in Connecticut is such that although they were uncomfortable with the animal-human relationship, they didn't say anything. Because then they would have been judgmental. As you well know, that's one of the mantras of liberalism, which is don't be judgmental. They sensed that there was something wrong with her, that she was crazy. Crazy enough only for daytime television. And Nancy Graceless, I mean, this is made for Nancy Graceless. The monkey girl? Oh, she's got a $1 million book here. Her friend's face is of no importance, that their face was ripped off. She's a movie star now. She's perfect for Hollywood, the monkey lady. Perfect. There should be a movie made about her. Right down to the gory face being ripped off. Are you going to put that past Time Warner or a Fox Searchlight? You must be crazy. Finally, the chimp's owner Sandra Harold fed him wine, ice cream, maybe even the drug Xanax. First she said she did. Then she said she didn't. Then she said she tried to, but some went in, but it didn't get in early enough to have any effect. In other words, she was told by some shyster lawyer, don't say you gave him Xanax because you can go to jail. Okay? So she said, I didn't. Then they said, well, wait a minute, they'll find it in the blood. So say you gave it to him 10 minutes before, that it wouldn't have had an effect anyway. Filet mignon and lobster for a monkey. I thought that chimpanzees were vegetarians. When did they pick up an appetite for filet mignon and old women? When did that come up? I've always felt that one in the jungle was nuts. That good-looking one, that kind of skinny blonde, you know what I mean? That one, I never trusted it with them cack. They're all crazy, these women, these monkey people. And I give money to the Elephant Fund, I said, and I do, and to the Gorilla Fund. But I don't lay in the bushes with the monkeys. These people are crazy. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Louis and the monkey told you so.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is Michael Savage, and here's what we've been talking about today. One, the monkey lady continued. Two, Obama's gang who couldn't shoot straight. And three, a revolt of the stock traders. Let's start with the monkey lady. Did you see the interviews today with the owner of the chimp who almost killed a woman tearing off her face? Why is the media making this whack job liberal lunatic a star? The woman fed the chimp lobster and ice cream and red wine, and bathed with him. This is the behavior that is perfect for shows on daytime television. Believe me, they are one and the same. Number two, Obama's gang who couldn't shoot straight. The new attorney general just called America racial cowards. Hillary Clinton is reaching out to Muslims. And tax cheat Timothy Geithner, our Treasury Secretary, can't come up with a plan to help the economy. I guess this is the kind of change you wanted, huh? If you're a lib, what have you seen so far that has caused you to lose faith in the Barry administration? Finally, we talked about the revolt of the stock traders. A CNBC reporter, if you can believe it, at the New York Stock Exchange stood up to the Obama administration to the cheers of stock traders today. And they said, the government is promoting bad behavior. Do we really want to subsidize the losers' mortgages? This is America. How many of you people want to pay for your neighbor's mortgage? President Obama, are you listening? How about we all stop paying our mortgage? It's a moral hazard. And they cheered him. All right, play the clip.
This is America. How many of you people want to pay for your neighbor's mortgage that has an extra bathroom and can't pay their bills? Raise their hand.
How about we all...
President Obama, are you listening?
How about we all stop paying our mortgage? It's a moral hazard.
Chicago's traitors mocked the Obama plan because it's a nun plan. Well, something I talked about recently was the Fairness Doctrine. The censors of the left have a new alliance against them. I, Michael Savage, have joined with the Thomas More Law Center to fight any attempt that the neo-Marxists in Congress may make to impose the Fairness Doctrine. Now, you've heard of the Thomas More Law Center before. They've been on my program many times. They defended Lieutenant Colonel Chesani in the Haditha case, which was a nun massacre, by the way. And now they're standing up for freedom of speech. Both Michael Savage and the Thomas More Law Center understand the difference between what liberals used to say and the neo-Marxism that liberalism has become in this day and age. We understand that despite all the claims of the libs that they just want balance, that they just want fairness, what they really want is censorship, pure and simple. They want to squelch dissent. And the only way to stop this is with immediate decisive action. Waiting until the enemy is at our gates? No. Demanding that we be kicked off the air? I'm not waiting for that. It'll be too late at that time. The time to speak up is now, preemptively. Because in spite of years of degeneracy, despite all the brainwashing in the lib media, the American people still understand the words of the First Amendment. You want me to read them to you? Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. That to suppress the opposing point of view is fundamentally un-American. And they understand technologically it is not possible to suppress dissenting thoughts. You see, if you suppress the medium of television, thoughts turn up on radio. If you suppress the medium of radio, the same thoughts turn up on the internet. There are just too many outlets today for the monsters in the Democrat Party to control. We no longer live in an era where two or three monolithic TV networks decide all opinion. And yet the libs would like to believe that we still do. See, but Michael Savage and the Thomas More Law Center will teach them otherwise. Go ahead, go make my day. The story of the mad chimp who mauled, ripped off the face of another person, gets crazier every day. Yesterday we found out that the chimp's owner, Sandra Herold, fed him wine, ice cream, and possibly a drug Xanax and a cup of tea. We found out that she snuggled with him at night. Today, more details have emerged. She fed him filet mignon and lobster tails. They bathed together. They slept together. The monkey combed her hair. Now, this is something that transcended the bounds of any normal human-animal relationship. Even a friend said they were uncomfortable with how the relationship had developed. She has friends? And though psychiatrists claim a relationship with an animal can often take the place of a human, this is something that crosses all boundaries. This is the mental disorder of liberalism gone violently and tragically wrong. Clearly, this woman had issues. She preferred the company of a chimp to the company of a man. She treated him as if he were a human being. That was one fundamental mistake. You see, wild animals, as you know, are unpredictable. That's why they're called wild. They can snap in a second. For reasons human beings can't understand, and this is clearly what happened here. Furthermore, in addition to the bizarre forms of affection she lavished on this animal, which in the twisted mind of some liberals could be seen as acceptable behavior, the friends around her, even though they saw it as a disturbing relationship, apparently were willing to do nothing about it. If only one of her friends would have intervened and said to this woman, "I understand you need friendship, but this is wrong, this has gone too far, this is immoral," then this tragedy might have been averted. But because of the liberal dogma that says if it feels good, do it, and that rejects any attempt to stand in the way of even the most degenerate pleasure that someone may want to partake in other words, don't be judgmental. Apparently, no one was judgmental, and no one spoke up in Connecticut. And it is that environment of not being judgmental that seems to have permitted this monstrous event. Here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. The lead story is pretty shocking. Guess what? The UN miscalculated. Oh, whoops. And they found out that Iran actually does have enough uranium for one bomb. Well, what the heck is the difference? You know that people in power are so smart, they couldn't even calculate how much uranium Iran has had. But what the heck? You know, a little slip here, a little slip there. What does it matter? There are no consequences for people at the UN. Now, if Iran does decide to build a nuclear weapon, they could do it very quickly. But that wouldn't matter to Israel. After all, if Israel disappears, oh well. You know, the only good Jew is a dead Jew to those in the UN. Terrible story. Here's another one from MichaelSavage.com. The rogue financier has been found in Virginia. The rogue banker has been found in Fredericksburg, Virginia, the next Madoff, apparently, from Texas. Still smiling. We'll see where that goes. Students don't believe Obama, and they doubt his economic plan. What? I don't believe it. Wow, some students didn't believe it. Shocking. They're smarter than most Democrats. Maybe there's hope for America yet. Lawsuit tests Swiss bank secrecy laws in pursuit of suspect tax cheats. Ooh, the government's going after U.S. tax cheats who hid billions of dollars at the Swiss-based bank UBS AG. Border drug war too close for comfort. You hear about that one? Well, read it. Lutherans recommend church-recognized gay unions. Ha, 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 ha. Oh, there's one bowling ball marrying another one. I mean, one bowling pin marrying another one, both wearing tuxedos. By the way, do you call them tuxedos when they're worn by lesbians getting married? A task force of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America recommended today that its leaders officially recognize homosexual marriage. Well, there goes the church. This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment. Savage. California's announced its plans to lay off 20,000 government workers to help with their failing budget. They either refuse to see the problems plaguing the state, or they're refusing to try to correct those problems. Wayne Allen Root joins us today with a report on why the California layoff isn't a disaster but a good start.
Thank you, Michael. Have you ever met anyone with a drug or alcohol addiction problem? They live in denial. You know, before they can recover, they first have to hit rock bottom. As long as people, friends, lovers, parents, spouses, doctors, anyone enables them, the problem continues to get worse. Only once they hit rock bottom, experience financial disaster, bankruptcy, homelessness, prison, do they have any kind of chance to rebuild their lives. Well, the government of the state of California is an addict, a spending addict. The state of California needs to enter rehab. But first, in order to recover, they've got to hit rock bottom. And they've got to admit they have a problem in the first place. The people of California have got to stop enabling them. Until then, it'll just be more of Groundhog Day. Same mistakes, same tragic choices, again and again, every day. And you wonder why it keeps getting worse. California reminds me of GM, Ford, and Chrysler, the big three automakers. They knew they had a problem, a disastrous problem, all the way back in 1977, when a UAW, United Auto Workers, executive said, and I quote, "I'm flabbergasted by the number of younger workers, 55 years old and under, retiring with full pensions." You see, Detroit was destroyed on that very day back in 1977 when they agreed to let auto workers retire with full pensions and health benefits after 30 years on the job, regardless of age. That was the day Detroit died. The autopsy should read suicide as the cause of death. Unions and union workers and auto executives killed themselves the day they said it's okay to work from age 18 to age 48 and retire and collect a full pension for the next 35 years until the day you die. The day a worker can collect a full pension and health care benefits for more years than they work is the day capitalism dies, the day American business must declare bankruptcy. And of course it happened. The auto industry is bankrupt. The American auto industry anyway, not the Japanese, not Honda or Toyota or Nissan, who pay $20 an hour to their auto workers, but GM, Ford, and Chrysler, who pay $160,000 in total compensation to drill rivets into fenders and let their workers retire at age 48 with full benefits for life.
What's the connection with California?
Because the same thing is happening right now in California. We've seen it coming for 30 years just like the auto executives, and we've done nothing about it. The California economy is being destroyed by government employee unions the same way Detroit has been destroyed by auto unions. It's not just California. It's happening everywhere. The federal government has a $5.3 trillion unfunded liability for the pensions and health benefits of government workers. We are creating a privileged class of government employee union members. But as always, in bleeding heart liberal California, it's worse and bigger and dumber. You see, California has been mired in a budget crisis. At least that's what they call it. They threaten to lay off 20,000 California state government employees, and politicians call that a disaster. I call it a good start. California's future is bankruptcy. The Golden State is actually deep red. They are $42 billion in deficit. California has the highest budget deficit in the nation by far, the worst bond ratings in the nation among 50 states, the worst public schools in the nation, yet it pays the highest government employee compensation in the nation and spends the most money on education in the nation. No coincidences there. The more we spend on failing public schools, the worse the results, the more money they ask for, and the deeper our public debt. But hey, it's for the kids. The more we spend on government employees, the closer we get to economic Armageddon. But hey, it's a living wage. It's only fair. Now, the private sector, private industry, understands how to survive a recession and perhaps how to come out of it healthier than ever before. Private companies are cutting budgets, cutting spending, laying off workers, cutting pensions, cutting benefits. Hey, 600,000 Americans a month are losing their jobs. I'm not happy about that. That's terrible. It's painful. It's a personal tragedy for each one of those people. But you know what? It's the only way those companies will survive. Cancer is painful too, but when you find out you've got it, you've got to have surgery, don't you? And sometimes you got to cut off the leg or the arm in order to save the life. Isn't that a good thing? Companies understand that 20,000 layoffs are painful but necessary. It's either lay off 20,000 employees or lose the entire business, and everyone is bankrupt. Everyone's unemployed. But not government.
No, of course not. The government never gets the point.
And certainly not the government of California. In California, they call a measly 20,000 possible layoffs of government employees a disaster that must be averted at all costs. In reality, California should be laying off 100,000 government employees, maybe 200,000, maybe 300,000, anything to save the state of California and everyone, all the taxpayers. It's better to cut off the leg than lose the life. California government should be instituting a hiring freeze, cutting salaries, cutting benefits, cutting pensions, and most importantly, stopping the insane guaranteed cost of living increases for government employees. Do you realize while the rest of us are just trying to survive, to keep our jobs, to save our businesses, California government employees and government employees across the country are demanding they get their automatic cost of living raises and step-up raises in the middle of a depression? Government is the reason for this depression. Government spends too much, hires too many, and pays too much. California appears to have found the one vote necessary to solve their budget impasse. So guess what? They'll go on making the same mistakes. It's Groundhog Day. One Republican state senator has caved in and switched his vote. What a surprise. Like I didn't know that was coming. He's the enabler. Government will go on addicted to spending. They will change nothing. California will spend itself into bankruptcy, and they will postpone laying off those 20,000 government employees. But wait, it gets worse. They'll hire more government employees. They will give out raises to government employees. They will pay full pensions when you retire at age 48. Until Armageddon. Until the drug addict literally dies. It's GM, Ford, and Chrysler all over again, just like in 1977. How sad. We've never learned the lesson. There's no chance of survival for the addict if you don't change your ways. And who's going to pay the price? The people of California. The taxpayers. You. Your children. Your grandchildren. At least if you're not one of those in the government privileged class. I'm Wayne Allen Root at RootForAmerica.com. Back to Michael and the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Wayne. Sooner or later, both federal and state governments are going to have to learn to control their out-of-control spending if we are going to survive as a nation. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Part of this country, one must examine its racial soul. Though this nation has proudly thought of itself as an ethnic melting pot, in things racial, we have always been, and we, I believe, continue to be, in too many ways, essentially a nation of cowards.
Did you expect the Attorney General of the United States to start provoking racial enmity? Did you expect him to provoke anger between the races? I never thought he was a very competent man. I thought he was a doctrinaire left-wing type of guy who was useful and put in there by certain, you know, powerful individuals. But I never thought that the man was this foolish as to start calling names within a few weeks of his appointment to the Attorney General's position. And I am telling you that if he wants racial bravery, he's going to have it on the Savage Nation. He says we are a nation of cowards on racial issues. I haven't any idea what he's talking about because I think the exact opposite is true. As we all know, everyone whispers it behind closed doors. They will whisper it as though it's a given, but that shows you how far you have fallen as a man. You have to start standing up to these race baiters and these haters. Here in California, we passed Proposition 8, which banned the use of race and sexual orientation and whatnot in the hiring and promotion of individuals. It has not stopped the Eric Holders of California from going behind the voters and using race and such for promotions and hiring. But I think it's time we put a stop to it, and I think we need to be racially brave, and say enough is enough. That's the end of it. And if you think you're going to push reparations on us now, you're mistaken, because I think this man has a deeper message for us than this one. Something tells me there's a deeper agenda within the Obama administration that has yet to have seen the light of day. On to other topics. The elections in Israel may be over, but the leadership situation has not been resolved, with Obama saying he'll open talks with Iran, and Iran's nuclear ambitions seeming to have been realized. This is an issue that we can't ignore. Joining us now is WorldNet Daily's Aaron Klein with an exclusive report.
We still don't know who yet is going to be the next Israeli prime minister, but Benjamin Netanyahu, the opposition leader, the leader of the Likud party, came one crucial step closer today when he received the endorsement of the so-called right-wing party, Yisrael Beiteinu, Avigdor Lieberman's party. As you, I'm sure everybody remembers, about a week and a half ago, Israel held elections, and Tzipi Livni and her Kadima party won 28 seats out of the 120-seat Knesset, whereas Bibi Netanyahu won 27 seats. So he needed this endorsement of the third-largest party in order to be asked to form a coalition and to become the next Israeli leader. It's still not official yet. The Israeli president, Shimon Peres, has to hold more consultations, but it does seem like we're moving in the direction of a Netanyahu government. And obviously, whoever is the next leader of Israel is going to have to contend with one major issue, and that is Iran and that country's drive to obtain nuclear weapons. Earlier today, I did an interview with the former chief of the Mossad. His name's Shabsai Shavit. He was chief of the Mossad Israeli intelligence agency from the 1980s until 1996. And he told me today that he's very concerned that President Barack Obama's policy of direct engagement with Iran will buy Iran enough time to produce nuclear weapons. He had some very strong quotes. He said, quote, "I don't believe there is a political solution that can be achieved through negotiations with Iran. Quote, my concern is that until Obama finishes his learning curve on the subject, the Iranians are going to have maybe one or maybe two nuclear bombs." So the former chief of the Mossad having some very strong words about Obama's declared policy of engagement and of dialogue with Iran, which seems to, by the way, be tied into a report that came out today, Michael, by the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is claiming that there's a significant slowdown in Iran's efforts to expand its uranium enrichment program. So the UN and the International Atomic Energy Agency is saying that there's more time, according to their assessment, essentially more time for Obama to engage in dialogue and diplomacy with Iran, because they say in their assessment that Iran is slowing down its nuclear production. But anybody who reads the assessment will notice something a little bit later in their official report on Iran and its drive to obtain nuclear weapons, and that is the IAEA points out that Iran has not cooperated with its agency, and also that the agency has not been given full access to all of Iran's suspected nuclear installations.
Well, how can they say that when they don't even have full access?
So, gee, Michael, I'm not a nuclear physicist here, but let's see. If the IAEA didn't have full access to all of Iran's nuclear installations, and if Iran is not fully cooperating with the IAEA, then how can that agency determine conclusively that Iran has slowed down with its processing of uranium? So this report here in Jerusalem is being read by Israeli officials with some skepticism. They're very nervous that this, coupled with Obama's full speed ahead diplomacy with Iran, could give Tehran enough time to perhaps produce some nuclear weapons. And that's what the former Mossad official said today. Now, I also asked the former chief of the Mossad, Shabsai Shavit, whether he believes that a strike can stop Iran from going nuclear, either an Israeli or United States strike. And he's concerned that at this point in time, he says, a strike will not take out all of Iran's nuclear facilities will not disrupt the entire Iranian nuclear project, but he still said there is a nuclear option that could certainly drastically slow down Iran's nuclear program. Obviously, this is not Iraq in 1981, where Iraq had one nuclear reactor. Israel carried out a surprise raid, bombed the reactor. That was the end of it. This is not Syria in 2007, where Israel carried out a surprise raid, bombed one reactor, and that was the end of it. This is Iran, which is developing nuclear capabilities underground, under civilian homes in several areas. So we're going to continue to keep an eye out for what's going on with Iran, with the Israeli elections. And by the way, just quickly, Michael, Syria, which Barack Obama says is a partner for peace, Syria, which Barack Obama says should be brought into the international community, that Syria was caught red-handed today by the IAEA, by the International Atomic Energy Agency, which noted, which said that they found uranium traces at a suspected Syria nuclear site that was targeted by Israel in 2007. And by the way, Syria denied that they were building any nuclear facility. So Syria caught with red hands building nuclear facility. Even the IAEA today noted that indeed that was the case, but still Obama seems to want to advance diplomacy with the Syrians. For now, this has been Aaron Klein with another exclusive update for the Savage Nation.
Thanks for the report, Aaron. Please keep us informed. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Our president thinks his porculous plan, putting billions if not trillions into the economy for infrastructure, will get us back on our feet. Japan tried that in the late 80s, pumping trillions into their infrastructure and boosting their economy only until the government money stopped, and they haven't fully recovered since. Joining us today is David Galland with the Casey Research Group to talk with us about this. David Galland, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Nice to be here, Michael.
Why do you think the stimulus won't work?
When it comes to the idea that the government can apply some sort of blunt force stimulus, magically restart the economy, there's really no historic evidence to that fact. I mean, the Japanese experiment showed that, yes, you can have an effect for a while if you pour enough money into it. And the Japanese spent hundreds of billions of dollars supporting their economy during the quantitative easing period. And what you saw was that the Japanese stock market did, in fact, bounce up a bit. But the minute that the government took away that stimulus, the economy or the stock market came right back down to where it was before it started. The bottom line here is that the government doesn't actually produce anything. And therefore, whatever they're going to spend for the time being in this whether it's a housing program, whether it's a stimulus program, has got to come out of the pockets of taxpayers, of which there are increasingly fewer. Or they can borrow the money, but of course the primary lenders to the U.S. Over the last 6 years or so have been the foreigners who are now staying away. Of course, the final option is to actually just print the money, which is where they're going. The bottom line here is that there's no historical evidence or support for the idea that this sort of stimulus program is actually going to do anything. And in fact, the more the government comes out with these new programs or promises new programs, for example, the housing program, the more the market steps aside and says, well, we're going to wait and see what the government's going to do next. And it adds a lot of confusion to the marketplace. It adds confusion to the investors. And so people will just sit on their hands, or they'll buy treasuries or do other things, but they're not going to deploy their money into the economy. The fact is that, for example, in the real estate case of real estate, right now the government is de facto the almost the sole lender in the U.S. real estate market at this point. And that is completely untenable. It cannot work long term. You can't have the government behind virtually all mortgages being originated. The latest program trying to keep people in houses that they shouldn't have been in the first place, and you know, anybody who owns a house knows it's expensive. I mean, there's upkeep, there's taxes, maintenance. There's no end to the costs that are involved with owning a house. And if you can't afford the house, you shouldn't be in the house. So this new program they're putting together is, it's just more of the same, and the net result is just going to be to drive the deficits, the U.S. deficits, higher and higher and higher, which is what happened in Japan. So that's the plan at this point, but I haven't heard anybody actually describe what the end game is on something like this. So how much are they going to spend, and what do they expect the outcome to be? We expect it to be inflation. We expect to see rising interest rates, and there's already some of that coming around. There's a reason that gold has been doing so well. It's because people are looking down the road and seeing that, hey, this has got to be inflationary because the size of the monetary stimulus has been tremendous, as I don't need to tell you. I mean, this new program, the stimuli, is so big, it dwarfs anything the U.S. has ever done. I mean, the cost of World War II in inflation-adjusted dollars is about $4 trillion. And so far, the commitments the U.S. has made in this current crisis is more like about $9 trillion. So we're talking real big money here.
Why do they think they can do this? Where's the money supposed to come from?
Well, again, the problem is, I'll give you an example. The money, first off, again, as I said before, it's either got to come from taxes, it's got to come from borrowing, or it's got to come from printing. And what they're doing is printing. Now, you know, call me cynical, but if there's one thing we know about President Obama is that he is an absolute world-class politician. And the fact that he came as a complete unknown and crawled over the heads of people like Hillary Clinton and became president of the United States it says he's a great politician. Well, what does he do? He comes into office, he sees the size of the mess that he's been left behind, and he really only has two paths. One path is to just step out of the way and let the market do what it has to do. Let the economy basically crash. It would be steep, it would be painful, but it would also be over much, much quicker. And there are historical precedents for that point of view. You can look at Japan after World War II, or Germany, or Russia after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Their economies were basically smoking holes. But because everybody could then value, you know, what is a piece of real estate worth, you know, they could plan on, you know, services that people needed and producing shoes, whatever people needed. People could see the opportunity, and the economy could recover. But so they had two paths. One is to let the market just do what it's got to do. And the second path is to look at the Japanese experiment. And you've heard the Obama administration refer to the Japanese quantitative easing on numerous occasions. And you could say they would look at it as good politicians and say, well, if we do that, there is a chance that we could actually boost the stock market. We could see some sort of a recovery as long as we kept pumping the money in and we can get through the next election. Because the worst thing that a good politician like President Obama, the worst thing that could happen to him would be that he became a one-term president. And I think, and again, not to be cynical, but I think every decision they're going to make is going to be aimed to get themselves reelected.
Well, with the amount of debt we're seeing here, are we really looking at our grandchildren's debt? Of course.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're closing in on that already. The Japanese, once they tried the quantitative easing and they increased the share of their government's share of the gross domestic product to about 165%, well, we're gonna go there. I mean, the Japanese have never been able to sort of buy that down. So what we're going to get here is persistent high deficits. And again, you know, President Obama has come right out and said this. He's made it clear that we as a nation should prepare ourselves for very high deficits for a very long period of time. Our chief economist believes that we could actually see a deficit this year of $2.5 trillion, maybe more. So if the Obama administration is anticipating those sorts of deficits for the next few years, we're talking about, you know, our great-great-grandchildren still paying the bills for this thing. Unless, of course, they try to inflate it away, which is the most likely scenario. You know, throw enough money into the system and the money becomes virtually worthless.
What direction do you think Obama is really going in here? What is his real end game?
I think they have made it very clear, and through their actions as well as their words, that they are going to do whatever it takes to keep things afloat long enough to get reelected. And again, I don't want to be overly cynical about that point, but I think it's a very valid one. So they're going to spend, and when this newest program fails, they're going to come up with another one, and they're going to keep going until they see some sort of response in the economy. And they will see a response. Again, in the Japanese model you saw, during their experiment, you saw from their bubble peak of about 38,000, their stock market fell to about 7,000. Then during the quantitative easing period of about 5 years, it went back up to about 14,000. But the minute they pulled the plug on it, the stock market went right back down to about 7,500, where it has been since. So I think that's the game plan here, is to spend whatever it takes and just keep on spending until they see some sort of a reaction in the economy. So the end game for us is that this has to be inflationary. And, you know, there's a lot of money. You can make a lot of money if you can anticipate what the government's going to do and the intended or unintended consequences. The good news is that investors can, in fact, do quite well. So we've been positioned for this, for what's going on now. We've anticipated this. We've invested ahead of it, and we've done quite well. So I think that's what people have to plan on. People assume that the current monetary system of the U.S., and actually the world for that matter, the fiat monetary system, is the way it always has been and always will be. But in fact, it's really just an experiment. The latest version of it was kicked off in 1971 with the Bretton Woods Agreement. And we're in a situation now, the country, the world, in fact, is reaching a crossroads where the fiat monetary experiment could come to an end. And by fiat, I mean simply that the currency has absolutely no backing behind it. There's no gold standard anymore. There's nothing tangible behind the U.S. dollar or the British pound or any of these other currencies except for political promises, and we all know what those are worth. So one of the things that people are going to want to watch is the price of gold is a very good proxy for, let's say, a hard currency. It's actually an alternative currency. And as gold goes up, it's really going up against these paper currencies. And we're at a crossroads now. The Chinese are holding an awful lot of American dollars, as well as a number of our foreign trading partners, because we've had this huge trade deficit. The Japanese always had a trade surplus. We've had a trade deficit of historic proportions. So there's a lot of money in these foreign hands. And what you're seeing right now, the Chinese, is sort of funny, recently went on record as saying that they wouldn't, that they were going to continue to invest in treasuries and buy U.S. dollars. But if you were the Chinese and you were actually planning on selling your currency or dumping your dollars, would you tell anybody? Of course not. Meanwhile, we have news that they've done a couple of very, very large deals buying into, for example, Rio Tinto for about $20 billion. There's been another purchase of a major mining company or investing in a major mining company for a couple billion dollars. So while the Chinese are saying one thing, on the other hand, they're actually trading their U.S. dollars for tangible, you know, companies that are actually producing something the people the world needs, in this case, metals. So we could actually see a real currency crisis coming up here with people deserting the dollar as well as these other fiat currencies. So the good news is we may actually end up with some sort of a return to fiscal responsibility. I'm not holding my breath, but it could happen.
Thanks for the report, David, and thanks for being on the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.